I want to thank Rasik Bhai and Subhadra for inviting me to speak. It is a great opportunity, it's a great privilege to be able to speak on Vedanta. So in order to do this properly, we need to, first of all, set the proper mood. Of course, we have done several hours of kirtan, that is perfect. We did the arati, we worship the Supreme Lord. So let's now invoke auspiciousness by chanting this 12-syllable mantra. Please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So the Bhagavad Gita teaches five truths: Ishwar, Jiva, Karma, Kala, Prakriti. Let's begin with Jiva. Jiva is you. Jiva means the very first thing Krishna taught Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. The difference between the body and you, the soul. That's the first lesson. Unless that is declared, unless that is understood, you can't go any further. And especially, unless one understands the difference between the self and the body and the self and the mind, you're not going to understand anything clearly about Bhagavad Gita. And who can be a better teacher than Krishna? And that's the first thing he wants to instruct Arjuna. That you're not the body, you're not your mind, you are spirit, soul. Jiva, that which is living. This body is not actually living. It's animated. Now, let's introduce the next subject matter. Prakriti. Prakriti means nature. And in the Bhagavad Gita, two different natures are explained. One nature is this material nature or material energy. And then the other prakriti or energy or nature is the spiritual energy. Now, currently we are hybrid. Why do I say that? You all have a material body, yes? Anybody here not have a material body? We all have a material body. But the very first thing I said was that Krishna said, that's not what you are. You are a spirit soul. So we're hybrid currently. We are a spirit soul, which is that spiritual prakriti, right? Because I said there's only two energies. So the jiva, you, the real you, the soul, that is spiritual energy, spiritual prakriti. And this material body is material energy. And right now, this is what we're dealing with. And it's interesting in the Bhagavad Gita, since I use this term hybrid. Krishna also uses the word yantra in the Bhagavad Gita, machine. The body is a machine. Early in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, not only are you not your body, but because of item number 3, karma, you are changing bodies one after another, samsara. Karma is explained in Bhagavad Gita. There are 3 kinds of karma. There is correct action, because karma means to act, to work. All right? So there's lawful or righteous, civilized karma or action. And there's also disobedient, sinful, criminal karma. Even in the material world, even in here in Southern California, you have laws, yes? And if you don't obey those laws, you could wind up in prison. Everybody knows this. There are driving laws. Soon as you get on that freeway, immediately you are subject to so many laws. The policeman pulls you over and then says, blip, 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 blip. Because you were supposed to know not to do this, not to do this, not to do this. Now there's a third karma. There's, I said, pious or righteous or correct activity, sinful or disobedient, but there's a third one, akarma. Karma, vikarma, akarma. Now, this word akarma many times is not properly understood. People think akarma means no work. But if you read Bhagavad Gita, that's not possible. If you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that you're always active. There is no such thing as non-active. Why? Because activity is the nature of jiva. That's its nature. Just like Krishna Kumar, my good friend, brought me this nice cold glass of H2O, pani, right? This nice glass of water. And even drinking water is something from Bhagavad Gita. What does Krishna say? Krishna says, why does that water quench your thirst? I made it that way. I put my potency in that water and it quenches you. Not coffee. Not tea. Chai. Water quenches the thirst. So, akarma, many people misunderstand. Oh, akarma means I don't do anything. And that's not possible. If you study Bhagavad Gita objectively, according to what Krishna says, akarma means to do spiritual activities. That's akarma. Spiritual activities. You're doing that today. Right now you're doing a spiritual activity. Kakaniji, what spiritual activity is everybody doing right now? Yes, Shravanam is a positive spiritual activity. And this is a karma. This is the real, and I'm doing the second one, Kirtan. Earlier when Gadadhar was singing, when you were all singing, that's you were doing, maybe you didn't know, but you were doing, actually you were doing two. Because if you do kirtan, you're also hearing. So you're doing two. You got two for the price of one. Spiritual activity. Then maybe this happened to one of two or three of you. While you're hearing, while you are chanting, you are reminded of something in connection with Krishna. For instance, my good friend, Radha Krishna Das, where is he? There he is. He sang this song, Hey Govinda, Hey Gopal. And it's based on Gajendra Mokshana. So, by hearing this song and reading the wordings, then I was reminded of so many concepts that comes from that Gajendra Mokshana Leela or episode. Then, I know you all do it. When you come in the temple, if there's no arati, you come in and you offer prayers. Vandanam. Yes, you do that. That's a spiritual activity. According to Bhakta Prahlad, there are 9 spiritual activities. Leading up to actually the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Yes, there is a conclusion to Bhagavad Gita. Any book, if it's worth its weight, should have a conclusion. Or like a good movie. Actually, Bhagavad Gita is the best movie there ever was. The best. So there's a conclusion. That conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is the 9th item of spiritual activity. Spiritual activity you know as the word bhakti. Bhakti means spiritual activity. That final item, beginning with hearing, chanting, remembering, praying, worshiping, leads to Atma Nivedanam, full surrender. And gee, what does Krishna say at the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita? Sarva Dharman Parityajya. Krishna is saying, all dharma. No. What did you say next? Mam ekam sharanam braja. Sharanam. Take shelter of me exclusively. That's the meaning of mam ekam. Exclusive. Which leads us to the next item. Ishwar. Ishwar means the controller. How does the controller fit in? Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, so many times Krishna explains, I'm the controller. Not only does he say, I'm the controller, there's no controller superior to me. He makes that very clear in the Bhagavad Gita, that he is the supreme, ultimate controller. And how does he control? He has his expansion known as Param Atma in your heart. And he says in that verse where Krishna uses the word yantra, car, machine, he says, we, like sometimes, you know, when you go to India, you book a taxi, right? So you sit in the taxi or the rickshaw, right? And you tell the driver, take me here, take me, right? Then you get out of the needle and he wants more money than he's supposed to get. Right? Am I right? I've been to India, I know. That's just business. Nothing personal, just business. But you're just sitting. And depending on the driver, you don't know. Right? So, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you are sitting on this car, I'm driving. Thank God, Krishna is good. Right? So, he is the supreme controller in everyone. And this supreme controller, Paramatma, is basically doing two things. Anumanta, he upadrashta. The two basic things that Krishna in the heart is doing, he's overseeing and sanctioning, permitting. It depends. It depends on your karma. Depending on how you act, he rewards accordingly. The fruit, the end result, is not really in our hand. You will find in chapter 18. Chapter 18, Krishna says, there are five things which determine the outcome of any endeavor in this material world. The ultimate factor, Daiva. Daiva is the super soul. In other words, let's say you're doing anything in this life, and you're doing everything correctly, you're using your full endeavor, and you have everything properly, you know, you've dotted all your I's, crossed all your T's, you did your homework, you did everything, and sometimes you still don't get the result. Why? Because that fifth factor, Krishna said, not this time. Just like today, my computer, every time I would turn it on today, it would stay on for 10 minutes and then crash. This has been going on all day, and I'm trying to do program. I'm trying to lecture, and every 10 minutes the computer is crashing. Now it won't even boot up. Krishna says, no more, finish. Tonight, Krishna is saying, let's see what you really know without the help of the computer. I'm taking away your crutch. You're on your own. So Krishna sometimes does that. He puts you on your own. So Krishna is the controller. Now, we have the last factor. Kala. Kala, there it is. Right there on the wall. The clock is ticking. Because you only have so many breaths, right? You all know that, right? You have so many breaths. When they're used up, next chapter. Anyone who's done cooking, ladies, you know, kala is very important. Otherwise, your rice will be unedible. Right? Cooking is all about timing. If you don't wait long enough, it's like, what is this? Right? Like, have you ever made a halwa? In the beginning, it just looks like mush. Right? But then at the right time, whoa. Very nice. Or any preparation. Oh, say you're making puris. Right? You have to have the ghee just right. You do use ghee, right? You don't use that oil, do you? Huh? I don't know. That's another class. Another class. We won't get into that. Anyway, your temperature has to be just right, and they're supposed to puff up, right? Puris are supposed to be puffed up. But sometimes if you didn't roll out the dough good enough, it's like crackers. You're waiting and what? I know, because I've been to temples, right? And whenever I go in temples, right, and I say, give me the soft ones, because I know they puffed up. If they try to give me a hard one, then that's all right. I'm not on that platform. So time is everything. So every one of us, right? The time is there already. And you're given so much amount of time to come to the point of liberation or success. There is a purpose to human life. At least if somebody wants to be righteous, pious, saintly, as opposed to sinful, then such a person is very conscientious, like Maharaj Parikshit. It is described that Maharaj Parikshit was always consciously surrendering to Krishna. Always consciously. There is the story of Maharaj Katvanga. He was an earthly king. And the demigods employed him to help them fight against the demons. So after this Katvanga fought on behalf of the demigod said, "We would like to give you a benediction. You helped us. What would you like?" So Katvanga said, "Tell me how much time I have left in this body." The demigod said, "You have 1 moment left." What did Katvanga say? "Oh, then let me go to the heavenly planets." No, he didn't say that. He didn't say, "Take me to Las Vegas." He didn't say, "Take me to Disneyland." What did Katvanga say? "All right, if I have 1 moment left, let me Atmanivedanam. Let me fully surrender to Krishna." And he did it. Yes, it can happen in a split second if you really want it. And if you are convinced that this surrender to Krishna, Atmanivedanam, is the actual conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Now, Bhagavad Gita is not confusing. Some people, over the years, many people have said, "Prabhu, I find Bhagavad Gita confusing." It's not confusing for me. It's very, very clear. Krishna doesn't contradict himself. He's actually very, very consistent. He makes it clear. For instance, although one person, he tried to say, "Oh, Bhagavad Gita preaches nonviolence." And I would say, "Wait a second. In every chapter, what is Krishna telling Arjuna? Fight." And I go, "How? Which Bhagavad Gita is he reading?" At least for Arjuna, Krishna is not telling him shanti, shanti, shanti. Krishna is saying, "I want you to fight." And for us, there's a fight. Now, we don't have to fight Duryodhan. We don't have to fight. But we do have a fight. That's explained in Bhagavad Gita. Remember, we're hybrid. So, what is the condition of us as a hybrid? This material body, this material mind, and the material energy is trying to drag you. It's trying to pull you further down. It's trying to absorb your attention, energy, right? That's what this material energy is doing. And in fact, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that this material energy is insurmountable. She's too powerful. She is too powerful. Look what she's got. She's too powerful. Why is she too powerful? Krishna made her that way. She has a job to do. So, Krishna says, there's only one way to overcome this powerful material energy, which is, now, you gotta understand, what is the material energy trying to do? The material energy is trying to make you more and more under her influence. She has two potencies. One potency is she attracts you to become more materialistically inclined. Then, once she does that, She has another potency, covering. Where you think, oh, this is great. You might know the classic story of Indra. Indra, the king of heaven, was once cursed to become a hog. Yes, even your king of Indra, it doesn't mean you're free to do, you know, he got cursed to become a hog. Gotta watch out for those rishis. They can really do a number on you. So Indra, as a hog, hey, the hogs have their families too. You live in nice houses here in Orange County, right? I've been to some of your houses, live very nicely. The hog has a very nice house. He has wife. Yeah, he has a wife. He has children. And he's very happy eating his prasad. He thinks it's great. What you don't want to eat, right? There's examples, right? People in the field doing their business, the hog comes, knocks them over. Dinner time. Right? You know better than me. So Indra, in the form of a hog, was with his family. So Lord Brahma came out of compassion and spoke to Indra the hog. He said, Indra, look at you. Look at your condition. Indra said, what are you talking about? I'm happy here. Brahma was saying, why don't you come back and be king of heaven? Why? I'm happy. That's Maya. He's living like, you go to India, you see the condition of a hog. Do you want to live like that? No. You don't want to live like that. You want to eat like a hog eats? No. You have better sense. You have a higher consciousness. You have a higher taste. But when Indra was a hog and Brahma was telling him, come on, come back and be Indra. Because of that covering potency of Maya, the material energy, he was satisfied. Lord Kapila, another incarnation of Krishna, when he was speaking to his mother, Devahuti, was saying, even the worm feels happy in its worm existence. Just see what's happening. You see it, we all see it. You may be going to your job, you might see a homeless person, right? Or you, like where I'm from, New York, before becoming a devotee, I used to see so many drunkards on the Bowery, right? I used to see people living in the wintertime on cardboard boxes on the street. Still, yes, right. Right? So, when Brahma said to Indra, Indra, it's time to come back, Indra said no. So then Brahma took a sword and was about to slaughter him. Then Indra, oh, okay, okay. I'll come back and be king of heaven. That's what it took. But this story is to illustrate how powerful is this material energy empowered by Krishna to pull you down and to cover your intelligence. We see it sometimes with our own family members. Sometimes one family member will start to go astray and start to be involved in very, very sinful activities. Maybe intoxication or maybe some illicit affair. And the other family members are trying to talk to them. But because the person is under the influence of that material nature and covered over, it's like talking to a wall, right? Maybe you've had that experience. Just like if you have ever seen a person who is extremely intoxicated, try to talk to them. It's impossible. So this material energy is so powerful. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there's only one way to overcome it. I'm sorry. There is no second option. That only way is surrender. Which again, is the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. And he said that in chapter 7. So already in chapter 7, he's saying, there's only one way to escape the clutches of my energy. Because he says, Daiviyeshu gunamayi mama. This is my energy. She's not independent. She works under me. Same thing he says in chapter 9. Mayad yakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Hetunane nakonteya jagadvi parivartate. Some people think, oh, everyone is independent. No. That's why Krishna makes it very clear that he is, and I mentioned it already, he is the supreme controller. And that's why this verse in chapter 7 is very, very important for if you want to understand Bhagavad Gita. If you really want to understand Bhagavad Gita, this verse in chapter 7, where Krishna says, Mattak Parataram Nanyat. It's very, very important. Krishna is saying, no truth superior to me. This is not arbitrary. If you actually want to understand Bhagavad Gita, then these are the facts you're dealing with. That this material energy is insurmountable. Just like what's happening right now on the East Coast. You all know, you're seeing what's going on. Anybody going to control that hurricane? President Obama, what's he going to do? The Republicans, Democrats going to get together? Okay, let's make a law. Stop, hurricane. They can't do anything. Why? Because that hurricane ultimately is coming from Krishna. Ultimately. It's the material energy, and she's not working independently. And that has to do with our karma. Do you know, if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's two chapters in the Bhagavatam where Shukadeva Goswami describes the Ram Leela, Ramchandra Bhagwan. So, at the end of that narration, it said that during Ram Raja, when Ram was actually ruling this earth in Ayodhya, he was here a few million years ago. It's not a myth. Does anybody here think that Ram is a myth? No. I know I read somewhere, I don't know how true it is, but a few months ago I read that in India the government is trying to stipulate that Ram and Krishna are a myth. Did you ever see anything like that? Yes. Well, I was shocked. That's to be expected. But India, after NASA, you saw those shots of NASA, the bridge? Hello? And one of the things Prabhupada used to hammer with us Westerners, these are not myths. When it said that Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill for 7 days, that happened. And there are many other descriptions in the Bhagavatam which don't tally with the scientists and Darwin, Asura. No. We take it as it is. That's one thing Prabhupada was very insistent on. Don't take these as stories. They're histories. Not stories, histories. Fact. So, we are trying to understand the conclusion, the message. What is the message of Bhagavad Gita? Because Bhagavad Gita is not just for Arjuna. As I've told some of you in other programs, this whole Krishna Leela is a drama, beginning with Janmashtami, ending up with battle of Kurukshetra and then Maushala Lila when Krishna returns. So for 125 years, Krishna was doing a drama. But there were many, many lessons and purposes to be gleaned. That's why we study Srimad Bhagavatam, to extract all the necessary lessons, because they're for our benefit. So in the case of Bhagavad Gita, if Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, he's actually speaking to me and you. Because as soon as Krishna left the planet, Kali Yuga began. And that was 5,000 years ago. Arjuna didn't stay much longer. After Krishna disappeared, Arjuna took care of Krishna's wives, and then he met his brother Yudhisthira, and then Yudhisthira and his brothers, then they left. So Arjuna was around for some time, but not much long. So what's the Bhagavad Gita for? It's for me and you. It's for us how we can execute the mission of human life. You had, some months ago, you had that Swami, he gave a series of lectures on Vedanta Sutra, right? So I don't know if he covered it, but the very first aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra, did he discuss that? The very first, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Meaning, now that you're a human being, your main business is self-realization. And as I already pointed out at the beginning, that's the first thing Krishna's talking about. Self-realization doesn't mean, oh, how can I get a good job? Self-realization doesn't mean, how can I marry that pretty girl? That's not self-realization. That's all right. That can go on. But don't think, oh, I am doctor. Now my life is success. Oh, I am lawyer. I am now success. I have executed success. Oh, I am married to famous movie star. Everybody watches. No. Here is the criteria of a successful human life. Did you realize your real self? Not the self that you see in the mirror. Not that one. That's a disguise. Even Krishna says in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, you change clothes, you change bodies. So even you have a great body. Now, I'm fortunate. I look in the mirror, I go, oh! Right? Now, you may be different. You may go look in the mirror, boy, what a handsome. Oh, that's all right. But what about the next one? Can you guarantee that it's going to be? Just like some of you heard me preach that we should desire to go back to Godhead, right? And of course, there's always somebody, no, I want to come back, Prabhu. I say, okay, but you're thinking you're coming back to Orange County. But it may be Baghdad. Can you guarantee? Therefore, no. You should desire to go back and join Krishna. Because coming back, right? Say you take birth, East Coast. They're getting it right now. See, I escaped the East Coast. And now somebody's thinking, yeah, but we get earthquakes. Yes, that's all right. Anyway, self-realization is the purpose of human life. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with becoming materially successful. That's all right. But don't think, now my business is done. There's a very nice statement by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This statement by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, And he's specifically preaching and speaking to Indians, not us Mlechas and Yavanas here. Well, there's only one of us. But Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, is directly speaking to Bharat Janma. You're all Bharata, right? You're all Indian, yes? Right? Or you might use the word Hindu, right? Some of them. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya is speaking to you. And he says, you should make your life successful. And then Prabhupada, in his purport, clarifies it just in case someone's not clear. Yes, be materially successful, or as they say in the commercials, be all that you can be. Fine. But that's not where it ends. You still have to achieve your spiritual identity. Or the way I like to explain it, which the way I can grasp it. We learn from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in chapter 15, Mamai Vangso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, Angsha. You are Krishna's Angsha. You are part and parcel of Krishna. That's another way of saying Jiva. You are Krishna's Angsha. Problem? Not necessarily, but some people. The difference is tiny, tiny, tiny. But we want to be big, 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 big. Nah, stay tiny. You'll be much happier. So, as Krishna's part and parcel, Angsha, and according to Bhagavad Gita, we always existed. You were never born, and you don't die. Hallelujah, I don't die. Great. And I always existed. Great. Praise the Lord. Now, what is my purpose? If I always existed, and I'm always going to exist, then what am I supposed to be doing? That is what is called self-realization. To discover what you are meant to do for eternity. Basically, I mean, that's a whole week seminar I could give. But to make it simple, I will quote Jesus Christ. I'm sure you've heard of Jesus Christ living in America. You've heard that name. Jesus Christ gives a perfect, simplistic understanding of what is the goal of our lives. Love God. Now the question, who's God? Well, I just explained, according to Bhagavad Gita, who's God? Krishna. And there's no competition. There is no equal. There's no, because he said, Matak Paratanam, there's no superior and no applications being accepted. The post is already taken. So, according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is God. Parameshwar, the Supreme. Okay? Now, Jesus Christ said, love God. Alright? With your whole heart, your soul, your mind. That is bhakti. Bhakti is there. When I preach to Christians, this is the verse I try to unite them. Because they want to talk about idol worship. And when, no, I don't waste my time with them on idol worship. Are you worshiping idols, Bhaktu? No. You're not worshiping an idol. Anybody worship? I'm not worshiping an idol. But that's what they want to do. Oh, like my father, you worship idols. I'd go to my wife, you worshiping an idol? I'm worshiping God. I'm not worshiping an idol. And even I saw coming up here at one Christian church, they got it. They say that if you are always absorbed in the economy, you're an idol worshiper. That was, they had, you know how sometimes they have the thing outside? They got it right. So, Jesus said, love God with your whole soul, your whole heart, your whole mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's exactly what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. Jesus said, love God. Krishna says, surrender to me, because I'm God. It's not a problem. If you're God, you can say that. And why should you love your neighbor as yourself? Because you learn from Bhagavad Gita, everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. Not just the Indians, no offense. Everyone. The animals too. Right? All living entities. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, make your life successful. So, whatever you need to live comfortably, happily, fine. But, he says, now, after being successful, you should distribute welfare for the whole human population. And the best welfare that you can do is to give people this understanding of Bhagavad Gita, which is your book. Your book from India is Bhagavad Gita. So be proud of your book. Bhagavad Gita was not spoken in New York. Bhagavad Gita was spoken in Kurukshetra. Now, where is Kurukshetra? What part of India is it? Huh? North India? Punjab? Haryana? So now, how many people Punjabis here? All right. Be proud. Your Bhagavad Gita was spoken in your country. But don't get puffed up. Because we have to obey Bhagavad Gita. So, now the question comes. Is there a simple method that synthesizes this? Yes. That is the gift of Lord Chaitanya. He made this whole thing easy, simple. Doesn't Krishna say a similar thing? Susukam kartum. Krishna says, this Bhagavad Gita is joyfully performed. How many people enjoyed today? Did you enjoy the singing? Are you enjoying my talk? Thank you. Thank you very much. Are you going to enjoy the prasad? Anybody not going to enjoy the prasad? I don't think so. You heard me say many times, the only reason I joined this movement was for prasad. So, Krishna says, susukam kartam, it's joyful, it's easy, it's natural, it's pleasurable. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, I have the simplest method. Hare nama, hare nama, hare nama eva kevalam. Kalo nastiva, nastiva, nastiva gatiranyatai. Why does he say three times, no, no, no? Because it's not by ordinary karma. It's not by ordinary yoga. It's not by ordinary jnana. No. It's by this bhakti. It is by this surrender. And he makes the process easy. Hare Nama. The holy name of Krishna. That's it. Simple. The conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is to chant Hare Krishna. Everybody. Amen, and thank you very much.